Yeah. Hey, everybody, put your hands together here. We have a very special guest joining us on the phone right now. Please welcome, it's John Huber from the Crowned Heads. Welcome to Blowing Smoke, John. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for the warm welcome. I appreciate it.
And you're down home today in the Nashville area?
We are home in Nashville, yes.
And
yes,
sharing some of the nice weather we're having up here, too, I understand.
It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful first day of spring, and been out and about running some errands, enjoying it, and getting ready to work in the garden when I get off the phone with you guys. So
fantastic. Well, we appreciate you taking some time for us on a beautiful Sunday, and we'll have some fun here with you and get clued in on what you're doing. I have a little bit. I have to share a little bit of some history that I have with you, John, and okay. And it is the Western Pennsylvania Cigar Crawl. Now, we're coming up on the 13th year of this, and I don't remember what year you folks got involved when you were with CAO. But way back whenever, my contact with the company was routed to you, and you have always, I mean, just sent so much great stuff up this way. You've always treated us so well. But it was a number of years until I had in my mind, it's kind of like when you listen to somebody on the radio, you just kind of have a picture in your mind of this person. For years, I had this mental image of John Huber, and this mental image was something to the effect of a business suit in a very fancy office, you know, with just the whole very upscale, very business-oriented look to him. And it was, I don't know how many years into this, that I saw a picture on a website somewhere.
And your perceptions were destroyed.
I went, there is no way that is John Huber. I mean, you kind of take that and just throw it out the window.
It
was amazing to me to have to, that whole image I had have to be readjusted. But
I kind of find some fun in shattering all the myths, and it's kind of nice to do that once in a while. But yeah, no, that's me.
Well, I don't want
to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I don't want to dwell on the past, but the past is part of bringing us to right now. So fill us all in here. How did you get yourself involved in the cigar business? When was that? And just kind of bring us up to today.
Yeah, well, what got me involved in the cigar business is I had moved to Nashville back in, I want to say it was December of 94, around there. And I was going to a wine store. I just kind of got settled in here, and I saw a copy of Cigar Aficionado magazine. I had no idea what it was, but I thought, that's kind of cool, a whole magazine about cigars. And from that point, I went to the cigar store to buy some cigars for my father, because I wanted a gift for my dad, a kind of a guy's gift. And, you know, one thing led to another, and I really just became enamored with the whole, you know, industry and the people in the business. And at one point, I just made a decision, this is what I want to do for a living. I was in a position where I just hated my job. I didn't want a job. I wanted to do something I loved. And that was it.
When was that?
Sights on cigars. That was shortly thereafter. It was about 95.
Okay.
When I really started, I took that same magazine, and just every address I could find in there, I would either cold call them or write a letter. I even wrote a letter to Cigar Aficionado. I still have Gordon Mott's rejection letter somewhere buried. We laughed about that. But I couldn't get arrested back then. I mean, I probably could have, but I didn't. But like Uptown's, a local retail tobacco store here in Nashville, who are now very good friends and supporters, and they wouldn't even hire me. And I said, I'll do anything. I'll sweep floors. I'll do whatever you want. I just want to be involved in the business. And literally, like, it's like a movie, like the very last opportunity, the last ad in that magazine was CAO, and they were on 830 Kendall Drive, Nashville, Tennessee, and I was like, oh my God, you know, they're here in Nashville, and I'm in Nashville. So I sent a letter, heard nothing, and at that point, I didn't know what to do, and 4 months later, I got the phone call from John Oskiner, who I didn't even know who he was, and I went in, interviewed a couple times, and the rest is history, I guess.
And when they brought you in, what were you doing the first day there? What was your job?
Yeah, he says, look, I like your passion, I like your enthusiasm, but I really don't have any room for anybody except I needed a shipping manager. And I said, oh man, I'll do the best. That's great. And I lied about everything just to con my way to get in. I had no idea what I was doing. And, I was like writing everything in a UPS log with a pencil. And I'm like trying to figure out where to store boxes and learning, you know, the sizes, and at that time we were in humidors as well, so I learned all these different woods, and you know, it was a process. But in the meantime, I was trying to figure out ways to promote the brand at that time, and luckily I stumbled across an opportunity with a local radio station, and just kind of really played that out for a bit, and I came back and I talked to Jono, and I said, here's the tapes, and with me on a radio show going, I'm the cigar, you know, guru guy. For some reason, I don't know how that even happened. And he says, who is this? And I said, this is me on the radio. I've been doing this every Friday during drive time. He said, really? He's like, that's fantastic. He goes, you know what? You're promoted. You're the director of promotions and public relations.
Nice.
Well, there you go.
That was, yeah, that was 5 months into the shipping thing. And to this day, you know, this is 15 years later, John will say, John Huber was the worst shipping manager in the history of the terrible at his job. And, you know, thank God I was terrible at it, too, you know. And so,
well, yeah, back then, when you stepped into CAO at that point, give us an idea of where they got to here recently, at the point where you parted ways with them, and
yeah,
what the company was like then. Give us kind of a before and after.
I'll tell you, it's a dramatic before and after, really, because when I walked in for the first interview, I walked in wearing this really nice, you know, blue pinstripe suit, and I was like dressed to the T. And I get in there, and there's four people packing boxes, and Jono in his office. And I'm like, what the hell am I walking into? You know, it was like, literally, at that point, he had just moved out of his home office, basically, into like this little shanty of a 2,000 square foot facility that basically was administrative, storage, shipping, everything. And that's where we were up until 2007.
Wow.
So, I mean, it seems like a long time, but it was a real quick ride. We went from, like, you know, I tell people, like, the first time I walked into the new CAO offices, which are no longer, but when I walked into there, I was like, oh my God, it felt like somebody was taking me from like minor league ball into Yankee Stadium. I was like, we're going to work here? I was like, oh my, yeah, I had no idea, because up until that time, we were all working like literally right on top of each other. Like, we didn't need inter-office email. We didn't have it because we were well on top of one another. So you heard conversations, you overheard things,
yeah,
the receptionist was saying. So it was, that was how tight it was. I mean, we didn't even have loading docks. I mean, I was telling this to my fiance the other day. So when we first started, if we got a shipment of cigars, we'd take, each of us take a hand truck out there, 100 feet to the curb, load it up, roll it back in the front door, unload it, roll it back out. Everything was by hand. So, I mean, it was 0 to 60 in a very quick amount of time, a very short amount of time.
And so it's safe to say that everybody involved there wore a lot of different hats at the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, Tim did, I did. You know, Jono certainly did. I mean, everybody did. And, you know, that was the beauty of it. And I tell people to this day, I said, CAO to me was more than a cigar company. It was like a family. And to me, once you got rid of that family and those people, it'll never be the same. I don't care what cigar you come out with. I don't care if you come out with La Traviata times two or whatever the hell is going to be next. But, you know, it's, to me, CAO was about the people that created it more than the product.
I understand that. Now, at that point, how did you morph into having such a hand in the creation side of the product?
It was pretty much an open door. It was like, you know, Jono's, one of the things that I took away, he had many Jonoisms that I took with me and that I still quote to this day, and one of them was, you know, make it happen. And that was basically his whole mantra. He's like, if you guys want to do something, I'm giving you the opportunity. I'll put the money up and everything, but make it happen. And so, for instance, like one day we walked in and Sopranos was just kind of getting their feet under them, and that show was catching fire and everything. And so somebody walked in the office and said, oh, I saw Sopranos the other night, and you guys should get your cigar on there. You know, in a corporation, that would be like, you know, a year process of,
yeah,
going through the legal department and this department and that, da, da, da. John said, great idea, make it happen. So literally, like within a week, you know, I made the appropriate phone calls to get to the property master, to get to the deal and make an arrangement. And before you know it, CAO cigars were on the Sopranos.
Wow.
But that was just kind of a small example of how, you know, if I look in retrospect, if I look at it, I was like, man, how the hell did we pull some of that stuff off? But there was just no, the sky was the limit with Jono. He just believed that shoot for the, you know, the stars and you might hit the moon.
And so do you think that a lot of that success just came from that type of an attitude?
Absolutely. We didn't know what we were doing. Come on. I'm not going to kid anybody. We really didn't have any idea. We were just all a bunch of, you know, young people that really liked cigars, liked the lifestyle, and we just did what we thought was good. And
well,
luckily,
it's certainly,
other people liked it.
Yeah, yeah, I was just saying, it certainly caught on. I mean, oh my God,
yeah,
from the beginning to recently. So bringing us up to a little more recently, when the aroma was in the air that there were some changes a-coming, What was the feeling there as the big change was on the horizon?
Well, when I'll tell you when we first were acquired by Henry Winterman's, and I think that was 07. That really was a shock to us, that the people that were there at Yale, but they really stayed true to what they originally had promised, which was, we're not going to change anything. We want you guys to do what you're doing. And for the most part, that was true. Then, when you had Scandinavian Tobacco kind of got involved and took that out of Henry Winterman's hands, then everything started going in a different direction, and one that, you know, a lot of us didn't really like. So, to be perfectly honest with you, last year I was there, I kind of refer to it as just riding the wave to the shore, just because I would, and that's just my kind of philosophy, but it wasn't a lot of fun.
So, well, I think, are you saying that it was because of that more of that corporate mentality,
yes,
was coming into it, and so the way that you were comfortable with doing things, now we're switching into that, well, you got to file it with this, you got to talk to this person and,
yes,
send this paper out, and soon it's just not what it used,
yes,
to be.
And all that's what happened. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's like I said before, I said, you know, if I wanted to be involved in corporate America, I would have gone and sold drugs at the machine somewhere, and I wouldn't be in the cigar business. But these guys think that selling cigars like selling drugs at the machines.
So, you know, the eventual change happened, and,
yeah,
and you and a number of other people, was it a matter of, I don't want to follow this along, or was it a matter of them saying, we don't need duplication in these places, and we're just going to part ways?
In all fairness, it was a bit of both. I mean, they, you know, that whole, all the little nice ways of saying we don't need redundancies and duplications, there's a nice way of saying we're going to fire a bunch of people and you're all going to be out of work. And we went through all that, but there were a handful of us that we were approached privately to say, hey, we would really like you guys to move with us to the new, you know, facility in Richmond, da 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 da. And for me, that conversation was, you know, a real quick one. I said no.
because you had already lost, you know, what was your draw to,
yeah,
it in the first place.
Yeah.
So
to me, you see, it was about the people, not about anything else. I mean, like, in all fairness, if you asked me to be very candid with you, I think in retrospect, we made a couple of really good cigars along the way. But
a couple.
For the most part, I think no, I'm being serious, but I'm, for the most part, I think we did an okay job with product, but we did a great job of building a brand.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I think our forte really was. So, you know, and it just changes everything when you can't work with the people that, you know, brought you to the dance. I don't want anything to do with the whole new regime, so to speak.
And I'm sure that when that change happened, if there was any kind of a, in your mind, I mean, not a personal thing here, is that that wasn't something that you would look back and have any kind of a negativity toward the family there. This had nothing to do with them. This is what happens in business sometimes, and that eventual move just wasn't what you were interested in at the time.
Absolutely.
It was out of their hands at this point, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't begrudge the family. Listen, I mean, I wouldn't be on the phone with you today if it wasn't for the Osgener family. I owe a lot to them because they took a chance on me. So I would never begrudge them whatever they did, and I think they did the right thing. But the thing of it is, when you sell your company, you lose control. So you don't know if the next bigger fish is going to come swallow up that fish, and on and on and on. And that's basically what happened. And, you know, to me, premium cigars is a very romantic industry in the sense that, you know, everything's still made by hand. There's not machines involved. It's just still one of those rare things that's all, you know, human. Mm-hmm. And when you have a conglomerate come in and try to dehumanize that and make it just this innocuous brand per se, you know, and take all the people and the relationships,
there's something missing when that happens.
Absolutely, it just takes everything out of it. And to me, it's just like, you know, the way that I can describe it is, you come into a premium industry and try to apply a mass market mentality to it, and it doesn't work.
I think when one of the things that I've enjoyed whenever I know somebody who, either with my help or just friendship or something, kind of begins to get into cigars, I always like to see when they hit that point where they realize There's that romance to it. There's that ceremony to the whole thing that sets it apart. And I think when they realize that, that's kind of when they're hooked. And I don't say hooked in a negative way, like you're hooked on Marlboros or something. They're hooked on that because it goes beyond the fact that this is a cigar. It gets into something a little more that you almost sometimes can't explain to somebody. You have to kind of be in it to get it.
And the deeper and the further you get into it, the more you do get it. And I wish that everybody could have an opportunity to go down to the farms and see the people that are planting the seeds and then taking the seeds seedlings and putting them, you know, into the ground, and then cultivation, fermentation, harvesting, aging and fermentation, and all of these processes along the way. You know, by the end of the day, you really get a newfound respect. Even I was down there, I think, a couple weeks ago, and, you know, I've been in the industry for 15 years now, and I still, when I go down there, I feel like I don't know a damn thing, because I'm always going to learn something by keeping my eyes open, and there's some new, whether it's the farming end of it or the processing end of it, I always learn something and have a huge, I fall in love with the business all over again. So we
bring ourselves up to current, the big change happens, and people like you have said thanks but no thanks, and then this thing called Crowned Heads happens. Tell us about this.
Crowned Heads is basically, well, it's not basically, it is. Mike Condor, who was the senior VP of marketing at CAO, was myself, Michael Trebbing, who was the creative media manager. Michael and I worked very closely together for years. And then Nancy Eastman, who was our graphic designer for the last 2 years at CAO. And that's basically the four of us right now. And we've started this company called Crowned Heads. It's not really the Crowned Heads, it's just Crowned Heads. And with that, that is just the holding company name. That's not a brand name. You won't see a cigar on the show called Crowned Heads. That's just what we've called the company. And then we'll have different brands underneath that corporate umbrella, so to speak, that will have their own personality. The way I kind of look at it, to be honest with you, is, you know, like, if it's like the music business. If you had a band, and then the band releases an album called this, and that those different cuts have a certain feel and a flavor to them. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a year or 2 years later, they're going to release another CD, and these are the tracks on that CD, and they have a whole different feel and flavor to them. And that's how I wanted to create cigars going forward. I wanted to create the first brand, have these sizes, and blend them this way. And then, you know, next year or 2 years later, I want to release this brand and have these sizes, and, you know, and not be pinned into having Crowned Heads this, Crowned Heads that, Crowned Heads, you know what I mean? I wanted to have that liberation to be able to create different things.
You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I know the direction I want to go with this first brand, and it's already, we've already taken steps towards it, but I don't want to be locked into that kind of, I saw the mistake that we made with CAO, where everything was CAO, CAO Brasilia, CAO Italia, CAO America, CAO, you know, and you're kind of pigeonholing yourself. I wanted to have complete creative freedom, so to speak. And so, to me, I've always kind of said in previous interviews that Crowned Heads as a company, the infrastructure, the bones, if you will, are more like a band, where you have, yes, you have a lead singer, but he's no more important than the drummer or the bass player or the guitarist. Everybody
just promise me that there won't be a Yoko Ono coming in there somewhere.
A Yoko Ono, that's interesting. No, there won't be no Yoko Ono.
Okay. And I think we're safe. I think we're safe.
No, I think we're all right about that, you know. I mean, you know, I don't want to get caught up in the whole who is, you know, involved with it. And to me, and I've said this to a lot of people, I said, to me, what's more important to me is creating something that other people will enjoy. I want to create the product, and that's where I want to start. Well, I don't want to create the personality of John Huber. I don't need, you know, that.
Where did Crowned Heads come from?
Crowned Heads, literally, I mean, this is something we've been talking about for a long time, obviously, but when it came time to, like, okay, John, we need a name to call the company. I sat there with a notepad and I just came out with all these different names, some of them good, some of them really not good. And the good ones I would then pass on to Mike, and Mike would be like, I like this, I don't like this, I like this, I don't like this. And then the only ones that we could actually agree on, you know, we would just run it by the attorneys, and the attorneys would say, you can't do this, you know, I don't think I wouldn't buy this. One day I'm home, and this is kind of like in the hiatus period, and I'm watching Wizard of Oz. I've always been very fascinated with that movie. Nice. And the symbolisms in the movie and the illusions in the movie. And there's one scene where Dorothy is meeting Professor Marvel, and he's in, you know, it's in sepia, and it says on the side of this caravan, Professor Marvel, Crowned Heads of Europe, past, present, future. And I froze it. I was on watching it on an iPad, and I said, Crowned Heads, that's kind of a cool name. I didn't want something that was like La Flor did this or Cigars did this. I wanted it to be a brand, not cigar related. And
you mean you didn't consider Don Huber or anything like that?
Yeah, no, I didn't consider Don Huber or, you know, La Flor de Huber. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Come on.
So, anyway, so my first sounding board is my fiance, and it's always good to have an outside of the industry perspective, and she has really good taste, and I believe a lot in her. So I said, what do you think of this, honey? And she's like, actually, I don't mind that one so much. That's kind of good. So I took that, and then I showed it to Mike, and then Mike showed it to some other people, and and it worked, and it got by the legal department, so to speak. And so that's the genesis of Ground Edge. And since then, it's been interesting because other people have tried to like look into duality and other meanings. They say, well, it's like, well, like a baby being born, the crowned head, you're birthing a new, and I'm like, that's cool, but no. And then, you know, somebody else, T. Johnson, told me, he's like, well, crowned head is another way of saying triple cap, so it must be cigar related. I'm like, I didn't know that, but thanks for bringing that to my attention.
it's kind of fun to see what people will apply to this.
Yeah, but... and then I had hats made, it had the little CH on them, and they said, oh, Condor Huber, I get it. Like, no, that's not it either, but, you know, so I guess things work the way out they're supposed to, but that's
well, you know, in the social media thing, I think it's fun to throw something like that out there and just see what kind of, it's almost like a conspiracy theory, you know, and
yeah,
so you'll see something and go, man, I never thought of that, but that's kind of a cool way to look at it, and so pretty soon you have 20 people with 20 different things that crown heads means.
But, yeah, somebody even asked me, they said, was this based on motive, or was it inspired by this book by so-and-so, and I'm like, what? And I went on to eBay and I typed in Crown Heads, with these books called Crown Heads by, I can't remember the author, and I'm like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just trying to come up with something that sounded good to the ear, you know, and that was one of them. So
Crown Heads is the name of the band, and we're just waiting for the first album to come out.
There you go,
You mentioned the people that you have along with you for this ride.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of them, you know, in your mind's eye, tell us what you think they bring to the table for this band.
Well, I think that everybody kind of, you know, in the perfect situation, everybody should bring something different. You know, if everybody brought the same dish to dinner, you'd have a pretty boring dinner.
Yeah.
So, to me, I think each one of us brings a different dish and a different flavor, and when you put it all together, it tastes pretty good. Like Mike Condor, for instance, to me, he's a business guy. He's the guy that thinks, you know, the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, where we're going to be, what do we have to do in terms of volume and this and that. You know, and I don't want to be anywhere near that. And I'm more of the guy that's concerned about the product. And I've told Mike this is no surprise to him. It's like, all I want to do is be, if we were in the art business, I can't paint and I can't roll a cigar, but I can say, you know what, that is a beautiful painting and that will sell. And I can taste this cigar and tell you, this is a beautiful painting, this is going to sell. It's up to you to tell me how much it's to sell for and how many we need to sell, that kind of a thing. And, you know, Michael and Nancy are both together very creative people, and they have the skills and the tools. If I come in one day and I said, well, I want to create something that looks like this, but I don't know how to get it from here, pointing to my head, to here, pointing to this piece of paper, and they're key with that. They can make that kind of come to fruition. And they also have great creative ideas on their own, you know, and we just kind of like turn them loose. And Michael now has evolved more into being involved with video and online media, as opposed to Nancy's more the strict graphic designer. Like, for instance, our logo, if anybody's familiar with Crown Heads, the logo, she sketched that out herself.
Nice.
That wasn't a stock font or anything. That was
so it sounds like what the group of you do is complement each other very well.
Yeah, I'd like to think so, yeah, hopefully.
Well, too, and I think you're on the right track. I mean, I know that everybody here is very anxious to see what happens. So, so let's
talk
about that a little bit here.
Sure.
We have the people behind it. We know where you come from now. The next step is we gotta produce and record an album here.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, I told Condor the other day, I said, listen, man, I said, isn't this great, the buzz and this and that? And I'm like, look, I don't want to be the Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian of the cigar industry. I don't want to be famous for being famous. I want to do something. I want to create something. I want to produce, you know, something tangible that people can taste and enjoy. And you know,
where do you start with something like that? I mean, here you are.
Huh.
We've got the name of the company. What do you do?
What do you do? First thing is you find office space. You know, that was the first thing, because we got kicked out of our old office. The Scandinavians basically came and raped and pillaged all the furniture, and we were left with nothing, and we were on the streets almost. That's not too far from the truth. But yeah, that's the first thing. But, you know, listen, I'd be lying to you if I told you this was all dreamed up in the last 3 weeks. And this is something that's been going in my head since January of 2010.
Yeah.
You know, and by February of 2010, I had certain ideas in my mind. I had certain concepts, certain flavors, certain recipes, all of that kind of thing, that I said, God, if I ever got the chance to do it, this is how I would do it. So, you know, it's difficult because you want to find the right fit manufacturing wise, and we've started that process already. You know, we had some meetings in February in Tampa with the Olivas, or well, Jenny to Oliva, who's like, his family is one of the best growers, in my opinion.
It's got to be nearly impossible to be in the cigar business at just about any level and not have to cross paths with the Olivas.
Yeah, it's not, just to be clear with your listeners, it's not the Olivas that make the Oliva Serie V and the Nub and the Cane. And the Olivas for the Oliva family, basically, because there's also an Olivas with an S, and we used to use them to make our cigars. But the Oliva family, they grow to me some of the best wrapper and filler tobacco that, you know, pretty much everybody that's anybody is going to buy in this industry. And so anyway, we met with Gustavo and Janito, and we had lunch in Tampa and said, hey, you know, this is our concept, this is what we're doing, this sounds like a fantastic idea, we'd love to help you any way you can. And they did, you know, they were very kind, and they literally set us up on this tour. I don't think it was last week or the week before, I can't remember, but anyway, we went down to Nika, and they took us everywhere we needed to go. We had meetings with factory owners, we had meetings at youth farms, we went and reviewed tobacco, and it was wonderful, you know. The only bad thing, not to go off on a tangent, but the only bad thing, if anybody's out there and has a Verizon iPhone, write a really mean letter to Verizon for me, because the phone doesn't work outside the United States, but they don't tell you that until you get outside of the United States.
So nice of them.
Yeah.
So the process begins, and you've had your meetings, and you're down here. I guess where my brain wants to go with this is, when you go down and you begin talking to the people about tobacco, the people that are going to at some point supply this for you and put you on in a path, do you already have in mind some kind of a blend or a profile or something in mind that you're trying to hit, or does that just happen along the way?
No, I have in my mind what I want in terms of a flavor profile, and you know, then I know a little bit about tobacco to say, okay, let's use this, let's use that. I want it to look this, you know.
No, that's for this particular first album, so to speak.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And so the next one might be something totally different. It might be all ballads as opposed to some rock and roll on this one.
Yeah, and I think really what I'm trying to do is the main thing, if you want to use the music analogy, is mix a sound that is going to be pleasing to everybody else's ear, not necessarily just to mine, which is different than what I would be used to doing. Like, if I wanted to blend a cigar that I could smoke every day that I love, and I said, oh my God, this is great, it may not be something that you guys may like for the next. So being a brand owner now puts a different perspective on for me. So I want it to be successful. I want as many people to enjoy this as I possibly can get. So I might change the blend or the sound, if you will, a little bit differently than if I was just doing it for myself.
What kind of time is involved? I mean, here you are at Jump Street.
Literally, if you come into our office in the conference room, we've got these giant white sheets that we get from Office Depot, and we write on them, and we do it by quarter or by month, you know, Jan, Feb, March, April, all the way down. And what we did was we started with, okay, how long is it going to take us to do this? How long is it going to take us to do that? And then we have the blend selection, then we have this, and then we have the packaging, then we have this. Doing it the way you want to do it, I mean, I think the earliest you'll see a product from our company would be October. 2011.
Okay.
I don't want to rush here. Everybody says, oh, you're going to be at the RTDA, or IPCPR, whatever they call it now. I said, you know, no. I mean, to me, you get one chance making a first impression, and where the pressure becomes is like, okay, I want to do this the way you have one shot, do it the right way. And there's a lot involved every step along the way to do that.
So, we have some folks that are with us here on Twitter today that have sent some possible questions in. Do you mind if I throw a couple at you in the middle of all this?
Be happy to answer them. Go ahead.
This is from Mo Barbecue. He's a little nuts, so just so you know.
Mo Barbecue. Here's the problem with Twitter and all this stuff. It's like nobody uses the real name.
He has one here for you. It says, do they, meaning Crown Heads, have a quote-unquote target audience as far as a cigar smoker, for example, going after the boutique-style cigar lover, or who? And who is your target?
I don't have a target. And if you'd asked me that question 5 years ago at CAO, I wouldn't be able to answer that either. I never really have a target audience. I don't go like, I'm not like TV Guide, and I go, I want to get the viewers that are 18 to 24, and then the next hour 25 to 34. You know, I just don't have time to think that way. I would say my target audience is people that enjoy premium cigars. I mean premium cigars. I don't mean, you know, I mean, I want people that are into it, you know, I'm targeting that audience, if you will. I want people that appreciate something good. I don't want to be I want to be Screaming Eagle. I don't want to be Gallo. Let's put it that way.
But like
Gallo sells a ton of wine and probably are multi-gazillionaires. I don't want to be that. I want to be the guy that owns Screaming Eagle, and you know, they may only make. You know what I mean?
But that's, like you said before, you know going in that whatever that first album may be liked by these 20 people over here, but these two over here, it's just not up their alley. But maybe that's that second release may be the thing. So you have to have that in mind. How do you balance that? Does that become a, I want to say a worry situation, but this is one of those things that it's also subjective. So this might end
this
up being...
This is where having a balance in the company comes in handy when you have a guy that's business minded and a guy that's creative like myself. So, you know, Mike Conner comes in and says, okay, you know, John, you want to do this, but it has to be commercially viable. It has to be financially viable. I mean, look, we all have families. We all need to eat. We want to make money. We want to have a nice living. There's, you know, I'm not going to say we don't, but, you know, this is if I come up with an idea that probably, okay, using these tobaccos, it's going to have this yield. Well, that's not going to last. That's not going to pay the rent. We're not gonna, you know what I mean? So that's when Mike kind of tempers it in and says, okay, we need something a little more mainstream. You can do this in a limited edition this, you know, 6 months later in 2012 or whatever. So it's a healthy balance to be able to look at it from that perspective.
I think you already answered this one. This one is from on Twitter, Hedges Insurance. Her name's Trish.
Okay.
She's a loyal listener, and she's a delicious cigar smoker. She loves smoking cigars. And I think you already answered this question, but she says, how much longer do we have to wait before we get a blend to release to us? She's very excited about what you have in the works. And again, you said something like late this year.
Yeah, I'll expand a little bit on that point. You know, I don't foresee us having a box with the brand on a shelf in a retail store until fourth quarter of 2011, October, obviously. However, I do see us having blends that will be available for tasting prior to that. And one of the things when we created this whole concept of Crown Heads is I wanted people to be a part of the whole process. I wanted them to see what it takes from the ground floor up of launching a company and being involved and being married to the brand before the brand actually has a product. So that being said, you know, I would think that probably April or May or something, I may open it up and say, okay, the first 50 people to respond to this tweet, you know, we'll send out a 3-pack of samples too. I want you to review these. I want you to rate these. I'm going to have a rating sheet. And, you know, as much as people might think that that's like marketing and you know, and all this bullshit, I'll be honest with you, it's basically just using a captive audience to get some really great information back. And look, you guys are going to be the ones buying the cigars and smoking them. I want you to enjoy them. So why shouldn't you taste the blends before we pick them up?
Well, not only that, but I mean, imagine the thrill of somebody thinking that they had something to do with the first cigar out of the gates here with Crown Heads. That's an amazing draw from the social networking side.
Absolutely.
Now, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Now, I was just going to say, social media for me has really changed the way that business is done, not only in our industry, but you look, you know, all across the board, and, you know, I get tweets from, I just heard a tweet go off right now, I think, and I don't know if that was my phone or not, but American Express, I mean, you know, Starbucks, Zappos, all these huge corporations that use social media to their benefit, I thought, why can't we do that same thing? And I think that's one of the things that we did really well at CAO. You know, obviously we built up a database over close to 4,000 that, you know, was carried on to the next guys that call themselves CAO. And, you know, it works. You know,
Super.
It's that direct connectivity with the consumer. And it's on how you use it. You know, if you just want to say, hey, we're going to be at such and such store from 6 to 9 today, come out and buy 3, get 1 free, you know, then I think you're wasting your time. But if you really are sincere about it and you want people's feedback and you want people to engage, then I think you can use social media to be beneficial.
Well, it's reaching out and touching these people, and that means a lot.
And
that,
you know what? Reaching out and touching them in an authentic and honest way.
Because you're using what we talked about, that romance, that ceremony with the cigars, and that's important to cigar smokers. That is a very important aspect of this. And somebody who shares that with them and they feel that there's a relationship with you, That's bingo. That's it.
Yeah.
And we have another question here for you that we touched on a little bit, but maybe you can elaborate some more. This is from Sharing Smoke, and he says Crown Heads hasn't chosen a manufacturer yet. Again, this is his brain. But do you know what kind of cigar you want to produce? Please elaborate. So going back to, you have something in mind. Are you able at this point or willing to share kind of what aspects you're looking to capture in that first one?
Yeah, you know, I for me, a great cigar is not about just strength and power and body and all the things that people seem to equate with, you know, I don't want to create a cigar that's a chore to smoke, let's put it that way. To me, a great cigar is one that has balance, complexity, richness, volume. And when I say volume, I mean the feel of the smoke in your mouth. You should be able to chew it. It should be like, you know, it should be like biting into a ripe piece of fruit. It should be flavorful. It should be not be harsh. It shouldn't get sour. It should, you know, all these, I'm being very vague in my descriptors, but I think that the closest cigar to what I just described to me has been Epernay. And I told Dion from the outset, I said, man, this is fantastic. And the fact that it doesn't use any Ligero in it blows me away, to show me that you can use tobaccos that not necessarily are powerful, that just have flavor to them. If I was to describe the cigar that I'd want to blend, my ideal blend would be, you know, something with, you know, Habano wrapper, Habano Ecuador. I like that coloration, probably like 6th, 7th priming, not too high. I don't like the 8th priming because it gets dark and it gets thick and it gets a little bit more, I don't know, the appearance kind of loses its sheen to me. Probably like a 6th or 7th priming Habano Ecuador. As far as the flavor profile, it would be like an Epernay with maybe just a little click higher, maybe one more leaf of the arrow in or something
so
like
while,
that.
So while you're focusing not only on a flavor profile, too, you're also thinking aesthetics as well?
Oh, yeah. I want something pleasing to the eye. I don't want something too dark. I've never been a fan of dark wrapper cigars, and I apologize to anybody that's a real, you know, I won't even say a Maduro fan, because I think Maduro is taking on the wrong conception in today's market. People think Maduro, and they think of, like, you guys remember Onyx?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? And people say, oh, that's a Maduro cigar. No, that's an Oscuro cigar. That's, like, pitch black.
Uh-huh.
You know, Maduro, if you look, to me, the thing that's closest to an actual true Maduro color classification, because that's all Maduro is. It's not a leaf. It's a color classification. And to me, La Riqueza, Pete's,
uh-huh,
cigar, that, you know, that to me is what you, when you look for a true Maduro and you classify the color, La Riqueza is it for me. So I don't want to create a Maduro. I want to create something that's probably more like a Habano Rosado, maybe, or something like that, using an Ecuador wrapper, just a little bit lower priming, real high priming. I don't want something too dark.
I think everybody's
like an oily sheen. Just, you know what I mean? I think you guys know where I'm going. The right direction.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like I said, you already see this here. The people are very anxious to try to get some feel for what to expect from you, because they really are expecting excitement around this, and they're very anxious to be a part of it. And that reaching out and touching them with the social media is, I think, just gonna just blow people away if you come out with this opportunity.
I'm excited for it. I don't think anybody's ever done it that way before, where people have been involved with. You know, yeah, there's been like people get involved after the company's already humming and everything. I want people involved on the ground floor so they feel a part of this whole thing going forward. You know, and the information that I'm going to get from people that try the blends and everything, that's going to be used. It's all real.
I think people are going to embrace that, and this is just going to take off if you hold that. I have no reason to believe that you wouldn't, because of the way you've worked the social media up until this point. And I think when folks see that there's going to be a real personal touch to this, they're going to be flocking to you. I'm just really looking forward to seeing how this goes.
I hope so. I hope everybody enjoys the process and enjoys the ride. I mean, to me, the most important thing is, and you know, if anybody goes to our website and look at our philosophy, which is the About Us page. And it doesn't say a whole lot, but what it does say, I spent, you know, probably about a week writing it, but I wanted every word to be accurate. And I think the final sentence says, you know, it's not going to matter whether we have 10 90 rated cigars or one. So what's going to matter is that we did it the way we wanted to do it, with honesty and integrity. And to me, that's something that's missing, not only in the cigar business, but just in the world, man. And I wanted to do it the way I wanted to do it, with the way we wanted to do it, with integrity and honesty and authenticity and being real.
I've got two more things I want to run by you, if that's okay.
Sure.
Let's put on.
After that, I got to get to gardening.
Oh, I know, and I appreciate you taking all this time for us. But the first thing is,
I'm having a hard time watching my fiance do all the work. Go ahead.
But the first thing is let's put a crown on John's head. Let's give him a magic wand. Looking at the industry, if you could change one or two things, stroke of the magic wand, what would it be?
Oh man, wow! See, I got to be careful with that one. I don't want to say anything to offend anybody, but I'll put it this way. I'll answer this question as evasively as I can without insulting you guys. What I like about the direction industry right now is the emergence of the boutique guys. And when I say boutique, I mean not the big guys that just turn out cigars and, you know, 145,000 sticks a day or something like that. I like, You know, look, I've been a big fan of Pete's since, you know, when he came out in 2003. You know, I go back to 96. We've been friends that long. And I always told him, I said, man, if I could ever do this, I would do it like what you're doing, you know. And one thing I would applaud Pete for is he did it and has done it with integrity and honesty and true to his. He hasn't sold out. He could make more cigars probably, maybe. You know, but he hasn't. He just wants to concentrate on doing what he does better than anybody else. And I admire that more than I can possibly communicate to you.
So keeping more focus on the boutique concept would be the magic wand.
I hate the word boutique, but I don't know any other way to say it. Boutique, small batch, what have you. I just think it's more about quality than quantity. And it's more about honesty and integrity and authenticity. Those are the things that kind of drive me, you know.
And I think most of the folks that you contact on social media and so on would agree. I think they appreciate that. I think they see the value in that as a cigar smoker. The last thing here for you, and we'll try to make this real quick, is we want to provide a service here. We want to help. You know, you want to reach out and touch. So I asked the Council of Cretans that are assembled here today to help you out. This is free of charge. You can take this any.
You're not going to ask me to send you cigars, aren't
no,
you?
No.
That would be nice.
We wouldn't not be directly. So direct as that. But what we did here was I asked them all to kind of sit down and maybe think up of a possible name for the first album. And again, you can use these free of charge. It's a service we provide.
I want to hear these. You guys have something to throw at me?
So absolutely. So we'll start with Kevin over here.
I'll keep it simple. Right. I'm not going to get. I didn't get too imaginative. The Cretan.
Okay.
The Cretan.
The Cretan? That's the name of okay.
It could be a specific stick, you know.
Because, I mean, they are the Council of Cretans that assemble here every time we do a show, and that's our round table. So there's the Cretan. Do you have another one? That's it? Okay, we'll move over to Kyle.
Creativity is not my specialty.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's okay.
Go ahead.
I like Royal Head.
Royal Head. I might have problems with the legal department. I don't know.
Okay. Have any other ones?
Yeah, that's all I got.
All right, over to Jeff.
Okay.
All
right.
Jeff has a couple here, I think.
I tell you, you know, I really like the way you got your symbolism for your and the Wizard of Oz, the whole thing you've kind of grabbed that from. So just look a little deeper in the scene, and I think a good one for you would be ISIS.
Ooh. ISIS?
Yes.
ISIS.
It's basically if you keep on going further in that scene when they're in the trailer and he's looking at his crystal ball and he's talking about the wizards of ISIS or whatever.
I like that. I might have to steal that from you. That's not a bad idea. I like the way you thought on that one. That's very good. To be honest, before I started actually researching Wizard of Oz, I didn't know this guy wrote there are 14 I think books in that series of Wizard of Oz. There's many.
Wow. I didn't know that.
But as soon as
I heard where you got the name, I remember that from the movie. And I wouldn't have remembered it had you not spurred the memory there. Now, do you have a couple more there, Jeff?
Oh, just a couple more. The Marvel, if you're keeping on going with that. I love Marvel. Keeping with the scenes. I love symbolism. And I love things that kind of bring you right back.
Stan Lee might have a problem with that, though. Stan
Lee absolutely.
His lawyers might say something about it. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, you could call it the Hulk.
There you go. I think Pete's going to do that in 2013, probably. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
Any more? All right, how about Moose? Do you have an idea here?
Moose?
Apple, most or Goofy?
What? Moose or Goofy?
Moose.
I think that's a little bit too juvenile, the Goofy thing.
His name is Moose, but he said a couple are actually kind of Goofy.
Oh, a couple are kind of Goofy. Okay.
So what do you have for him here?
I got Ash and Cherry. Kate's tight ass going with the crown heads, the royalty thing.
Alright.
Crown Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
I had smoked my pipe earlier that day, so I thought of Old King Cole.
Okay.
Then another good one's like the Rook or the Knight's Tail. Let's say you put a rat tail on the end, that squirrely thing. Mm-hmm. And call that the Knight's Tail. Let's see. Smoke and Mirrors.
What you guys are doing, this is part of the process, and you'd be surprised how many of these names, if you ran them, actually had an attorney run them, they'd probably say you're going to have problems with this, and this. There's probably two names that you guys just rattled off that would have clearance.
I believe it.
You'd be surprised from the stuff people register these days.
Any more?
I will tell you this. That probably the name of the brand is going to be found before it ever hits the shelves. You guys, there's a guy on Twitter. It's the cigar feed, Charlie Minato. He has a habit of looking at the patent applications and stuff, and he's kind of done a few Viaje things and a few Tatuaje things before they were announced, and he'll probably do the same thing when he sees that such and such brand was registered by Crown Heads. So yeah. Probably, I think the it'll be out of the box soon.
Might sneak it out before it's official. Well, yeah, the one maybe. That I came up with is actually very simple. Everybody calls me El Freako, so why don't we just have Freak?
Didn't Alec Bradley do Freak already?
Yeah, there's a Freak out there.
Is there a Freak out there? See,
I'm screwed. Alec Bradley.
It's one of their big ring gauge, I think.
It's the Freak.
Yeah, there won't, that's one thing I can tell you. There will be no big ring gauge sizes. I'm sorry to disappoint.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear you say that. That's just not my alley. I don't know why.
Never was up my alley either, even when I worked. Yeah, so
well, and the final thing, John, is you mentioned your fiance. Congratulations!
Yeah,
thank you.
When is the big day? If you have one,
the big day is actually 48 days away. It's going to be May 7th.
Do we get invites?
So. You get invites. I don't know. After we get back, I might send you guys an invite. But no, yeah, we're really excited and we're happy. And you
don't
know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with somebody else and said, "Oh, you know, how do you handle like being starting a business and are you stressed out about planning a wedding?" I'll be honest with you, the easiest thing in my life right now is my relationship and my wedding. I mean, that's, we just sat down, made a list of things we had to do, and we worked very well together. So
isn't that the way it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
It is the way it's supposed to be, but up until I met Laura, it was never that way.
Well, congratulations on finding that. That's some people spend many trips down that road and have yet to find it. And congratulations.
I'm very lucky, man. Thank you very much.
And again, I'm looking at the clock, and oh my God, you spent nearly an hour with us. Thank you very
much. I'm
going
to hang up this phone, and I'm going to catch trouble because I got to steal a fence here, and I haven't started on it, and you guys are going to get me in trouble.
Blame it on me. I apologize. But I couldn't thank you enough. Thank you, John.
So
good luck
thank
with Crown Heads. And if there's anything we can do to help you out, don't hesitate to give us a ring, okay?
Thank you. Thanks again for the opportunity, guys, and have a great Sunday.
Anytime. You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye.
What a good guy. Mm-hmm. I am so excited about this brand coming to market because and I don't have any reason to doubt that John is going to hold true to that because that's been his whole reason for being in cigars is to keep this in this very close-knit boutique style, family-related, a lot of input, a lot of sharing in this brand, and I'm anxious to see what the first album, so to speak, is when they come out of the gate. But, oh, my God, we spent almost an hour with John. So we thank him very, very much, and all the best of luck to John Huber and Crown Heads as they venture into their own brand here, and looking forward to seeing what comes out.